Australia and Peru have announced a free trade agreement with huge wins promised for Australia's education, mining, health services and farming sectors. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says he will finalise the deal with Peru today on the sidelines of the APEC summit in Vietnam. Trade is top of the agenda at the APEC summit. World leaders are pushing to seal an 11-nation Trans-Pacific partnership after Donald Trump pulled the US out of the deal earlier this year. This APEC meeting is the first for the US President as well as New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. Australia's Trade Minister Steve Chobo is also attending the summit in the Vietnamese city of Da Nang. I spoke to him earlier.
Good to be with you.
Well, firstly, the Peru trade agreement. Who are the winners here?
Well, we don't do a lot of trade with Peru at the moment, but that's why concluding this deal is such a good outcome for Australia. This is going to represent a new opportunity for Australian exporters to tap into Peru. Now, it's one of the fastest growing economies in the world. It's had an incredible average growth rate of 5.9% over the last 10 years. It's got a population of 31 million people. It's a country that Australia hasn't had much entry into in the past. And in fact, they've imported something like $4.5 billion worth of agricultural products, of which Australia only provided a very small $5.3 million. So you can certainly understand the tremendous potential of this deal.
So Peru is one of the TPP countries. So why do you need this deal if you also want to have the TPP deal as well?
Correct. Well, the TPP is, of course, a regional trade bloc, and I'm hopeful that over the next 24 or 48 hours, we'll be able to conclude the TPP 11 deal. That would be tremendous for Australia if we can do that. But that notwithstanding, the fact that we've been able to get now and secure a trade deal with Peru, this is of itself a deal worth doing. But it also helps to build momentum to, I hope, securing the TPP deal as well.
Yeah, so on that TPP deal, the US is out. Donald Trump has said as much. Do you think there's any chance that he could change his mind?
Well, one thing about politics I've learned is you should never say never. So who knows? But certainly seems to be someone who's been very firm. He indicated before the election that he was not going to remain in the TPP, and true to his word, he's withdrawn the US from it. From Australia's perspective, though, this is certainly a deal well worth doing. There's a lot of benefits in the TPP 11, and that's why we've been pursuing it together with Japan and other countries, including Singapore, for example, because we know this is a very good deal for Aussie exporters.
Yeah, New Zealand's thrown in a curveball, though, haven't they? They were dead keen. Now Jacinda Ardern wants to renegotiate. Have you heard any of those details?
Well, look, we're almost at the tail end. It's effectively 1 minute to midnight. And as I said, I'm hopeful that in the next 24 or 48 hours, we will conclude this deal. We're not there yet, but boy, oh boy, we're very close. New Zealand, no doubt, will and has brought a couple of issues to the table, but we'll work through those, resolve those issues, and I'm still very certain that we should be able to conclude this deal.
So a couple of their issues are the restriction. They want restrictions on foreign property investment. They don't like the ISDS provisions. Jacinda Ardern called them a dog. But the Japanese media, they're reporting that the Japanese officials are quite worried, saying if exceptions are made for New Zealand alone, the whole thing will fall apart. Is that the danger here?
Well, look, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of New Zealand. That's for the New Zealand government to do. What I can do is pursue Australia's national interest. Now, if New Zealand wants to say, well, it's their way or the highway on different issues, well, that's New Zealand's call to make.
Would you consider the option of cutting New Zealand loose to have a TPP 10?
It's not that. It's a decision that they make as to whether they choose to sign up to an agreement or not. It's not a case of anyone cutting anyone loose.
So the Chinese are pursuing their own multilateral trade deal known as RCEP. Earlier this week, we spoke with Frederick Newman, co-head of Asian Economics at HSBC, and asked if there was any sense the Chinese now also wanted a seat at the TPP table. Let's take a listen.
That is probably what some members are hoping for, because it really would beef up the TPP, it would make it a much larger economy. But it is difficult for the mainland to commit at this stage. TPP, remember, is a very high-end agreement. It puts a lot of stipulations on not just on goods trade, but also services trade. And here, China is probably going to take its time to really join such an ambitious agreement anytime soon.
Frederick Newman from HSBC there. Steve Chobo, is he right? Is China potentially a TPP player?
Well, again, that's a decision for China, not for Australia. Ultimately, my focus here and now is on trying to conclude this deal between the 11 countries that are at the table having these discussions. That's what I know is good for Australia. That's why I've pursued this in the face of opposition from the Australian Labor Party, who haven't wanted to pursue this deal. Now, whether in time other countries might choose to be part of this deal if we can get it struck, well, again, that's a decision they will have to look at. But we'll have the agreement in place. They'll make determinations about whether they can meet the hurdles, so to speak, that a deal has. And obviously, for economies that choose to sign up down the track, they would all be adding value by expanding the remit of the agreement.
Trade Minister Steve Chobo is my guest this morning. Minister, you left Australia for the summit yesterday. I'm not sure if you've kept across it, but just in that short period of time you've been away, two more MPs have fallen into the citizenship saga, Jackie Lambie and Rebecca Sharkey, under a cloud now. Does that surprise you that this is keeping on happening?
Look, I think this is a complex factor. The fact is that the interpretation that the High Court has made on the operation of Section 44 was considered to be a curveball. There are many, many Australians, there'll be millions of Australians, who on face value would be ineligible to stand for Parliament unless they actively sought out their ancestry and renounced dual citizenship. Now, it's not surprising in that context, given the very strict interpretation the High Court has adopted, that now we see a number of members of Parliament who say, well, actually, it looks like there could be complications.
Barnaby Joyce reckons there's going to be more. Richard Di Natale reckons there'll be an election. This is a fiasco, isn't it?
Well, this is a consequence of a situation where a number of people, and obviously a large number of the Australian population, and no surprises when you have millions of people potentially affected in the Australian population, well, given that the Parliament is representative of the broader Australian population, no surprises that there are a number of MPs who have discovered that due to parents or other family members or something, that there is some type of, for lack of a better term, latent citizenship there. Look, ultimately though, as every member of Parliament has an obligation to make sure that they comply with the Constitution. I, of course, with my surname, enough about 1,000 journalists call me asking, am I an Italian citizen? Is there an issue there? And so many months ago, I made sure I had got a copy of a letter indicating I wasn't an Italian citizen and had not been an Italian citizen. So, you know, it's understandable.
So you're happy to provide that documentary evidence just to anyone who asks?
Well, you won't be surprised enough to know I've had many journalists asking to have a look at that.
Have you showed them the letter?
Of course.
Well, you've got people like John Alexander, Jackie Lambie, refusing to disclose this evidence until Parliament requires them to. What do you say to them?
Well, the Prime Minister has put forward a very clear plan now that will remove any uncertainty about where people stand insofar as are they citizens, whether they've renounced dual citizenship, so on and so forth. That will provide and be the catalyst for any referrals that may need to happen as a consequence of that, and that in turn will get to the bottom of this matter. But now, this is also, as I said, a function of what has been a very strict interpretation of the operation of Section 44. And that very strict interpretation, together with the fact that, frankly, people have had citizenship passed down to them through generations, so to speak, which, you know, no one reasonably, in my view, could have foreseen in many respects.
Minister, Corey Bernardi was on the program earlier in the week saying the option here is to prorogue Parliament. Do you agree with him? And if not, why not?
Look, I think that we've got a process ahead of us, and that is for members of Parliament to make sure that they declare their citizenship status, they declare renunciations, and then, if need be, if there is any uncertainty surrounding a member or more than one member, so for example in this case Rebecca Sharkey, the High Court can look at those sitting as the Court of Disputed Returns. They'll be in a position to provide potentially further clarification around the operation and interpretation of Section 44 of the Constitution. Alternatively, they will reinforce existing announcements and existing decisions. That is going to be the basis upon which decisions are made, and I'm very confident that the government, and in particular under this Prime Minister, that we've got now a pathway to resolve this matter.
And just quickly on same-sex marriage, Conservative Coalition MPs are drafting their own bill. Should the yes vote get up next week because they don't like the Dean Smith bill? Are you among that group?
Look, I've made it clear from the beginning that there's no point having a plebiscite if I don't respect the wishes of my electorate. I've made it clear that my support will reflect absolutely the seat that I represent and the decision of the seat that I represent, because that's the whole point of having a plebiscite.
But both of them will enable same-sex marriage. So you've got the Ian Goodenough led bill. You've got the Dean Smith led bill. Which one should go forward for a vote?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm aware of issues in relation to religious freedom. They are important to me. But we'll see ultimately what's brought before the parliament, because at this stage there are different backbenchers putting forward different points of view. I will make an assessment based upon the legislation that's in front of me.
All right, Steve Trobo, thank you for your time.
Good to speak with you.